This is a People First Radio podcast.
North Americans are the world's most compulsive and prolific users of legal opioids. Author Carlin Swarnstein was diagnosed with an inflammatory spine disease as a young mother, and she eventually turned to opioid medications to manage her pain. Swarnstein's book, Opium Eater, The New Confessions, is part love letter to romanticism, part critique of modern medicine, and it offers a distinctly different riff on pain, creativity, and mind-altering drugs. Carlin traces the long tradition of opium's influence on culture and imagination, from Thomas de Quincey to Frida Kahlo. Carlin Swarnstein was diagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis, or AS, a very painful form of arthritis that primarily affects the spine. Here's the first part of my interview with Carlin Swarnstein. Carlin, you write, "It came out of the blue. The disease and resulting pain have devastated my life. I'm still trying to find my way now, a decade later." Tell us about AS.
Chronic inflammation in the spine and around sometimes other joints cause the body to break down bone and then deposit new bone between the vertebrae, which can happen, doesn't necessarily happen. It's not super common. I think like 1% of it varies ethnically, but different populations will have roughly 1% of people might have it. It's more often diagnosed in young men, but it's not super rare either. It also is a form of arthritis, which is something that around 17% of the adult population suffers from. Like other forms of inflammatory arthritis, it's characterized by pain and stiffness that are worse in the morning and that improve with exercise. So painkillers allow me to do the exercise that will prevent my spine from fusing.
And when I read your description in your book about this particular disease, the word arthritis really stuck with me, and I realized that there can be a great deal of pain associated with this.
Yeah, arthritis is really awful. And kids can get it as well. I mean, there's a whole range of kinds of arthritis.
You've been asked again and again, I gather, to describe your experience of pain using some sort of scale. And it's something you referred to at least once in your book as a rate your misery scale. One of the most compelling paragraphs that I came across when I read Opium Reader includes your description of the experience of pain using metaphors and phrases. I'm wondering if you could tell us what you've been learning about pain over this long period of time and about society's responses to it.
In a way, the pain scales are actually not so bad. Although I feel like they're so subjective that I don't trust my own answers a lot of the time, and it is very frustrating to keep doing them. In a way, it doesn't really matter, since the pain is really in your head, regardless of whether there's a known biological cause, like inflammation in my case. What's important clinically is actually how bad it seems to you and how it affects your ability to live what you consider a meaningful life. And the way that people rate their pain or even their general health, which I get asked whether I feel healthier than other people my age or less healthy, that kind of question, actually, the answers to that seem to correlate very well to people's actual clinical outcomes. I've also learned that the fear of addiction and the fear that people are malingering can be a huge barrier to having an effective relationship between patients and their doctors or other healthcare providers. There's a really real reason to be cautious about what pain medications are prescribed, how much and for how long, but a first step would be acknowledging that if a person feels that pain is interfering with their ability to live their life, that needs to be addressed. It needs to be addressed in a way that is tolerable for that person. And I guess I also learned that, as with most things, the degree to which people's suffering is taken seriously as a multifaceted problem that needs to be addressed really depends on where you sit in society. So racism, sexism, and all the other isms prevent people from getting the care and support that they need.
One thing that I'd like to add to this particular look at pain is, I'm going to quote from your book again, "Over time, you find ways to go beyond just, I hate it, I want it to stop. That is to overcome aversion and attraction." Can you tell me a little more about that?
That's the idea, right? So there's a lot of, particularly with concerns about opioids, there's been a renewed focus on non-pharmaceutical responses to pain. And so that often takes the form of recommending chronic disease self-management programs or the mindfulness-based stress reduction program that I talk about there. And they use mindfulness strategies to try and observe your pain. So you notice it's there, but you observe it from a distance. I do that. I practice that a lot. I find there's a limit to it, and pain that continues day after day or ongoingly, and that during which you're trying to live an active life, it's very, very hard to manage. And I think that gets underestimated, how big a task patients are being asked to take on, and what the limits of that are, and what the effect on your mood is. And then mood is something else that you can try and deal with through mindfulness. But I think there are limitations.
You were prescribed a medication called Tramadol, and only after Googling it, and I'm taking this information from your book, you realized that it was an opioid. Much of Opium Eater describes your relationship with Tramadol, and I'm wondering if you could give us a sense of that relationship over time.
I guess you could describe it as a special relationship still, but not an unhealthy one, I don't think. After the 6 months described in that book, where I stopped the medication that I took to tamp down my immune system so that it would stop attacking me, I tried going off it for those 6 months, and in the process tried to see whether I would become addicted to opioids. At the end of the 6 months, I gave in and went back to my rheumatologist and begged for the immune suppressants. I went back on a different one. And it's working reasonably well. Things improved somewhat. 5 years after I started taking Tramadol, I do continue to depend on it to get through my day, to manage life. I still take the same low dose as when I started. How much I take in a day varies based on how I'm feeling and what else is going on in my life. And yeah, it does go up and down. And I've also tried other pain medication, which cannabinoid, which helped me to lower the dose to below clinical levels, like below what any doctor would prescribe someone just starting on opioids, for quite a long time. I don't tolerate it well, though, so it doesn't seem to be a long-term solution. My doctor and I disagree about the likelihood that I'm physically dependent on Tramadol. I think I probably am. He thinks not necessarily, or probably not. But there's no indication that I've developed tolerance or that I'm mistaking withdrawal symptoms for pain, which certainly can happen. And many toxicologists and frontline addiction people are concerned that in prescribing opioids, many patients just continue to take them because when they try to go off them, because of physical dependence, they have unpleasant side effects, and they think that they're in pain and that they need more. There doesn't seem to be an indication that that's happening for me. It makes my life manageable, and because I want it to continue to work, I'm very careful and very restrained about how much I use. When your mom suggests that you consider taking more opioids, either you have a dysfunctional family or everyone around you can see that they allow me to live a full life that would otherwise be impossible. So I think in my case, it's not that I have a dysfunctional family.
This is People First Radio. I'm Kevin. Author Carlin Swarnstein was diagnosed with an inflammatory spine disease as a young mother, and she eventually turned to opioid medications to manage her pain. Swarnstein's book, Opium Eater, The New Confessions, is part love letter to romanticism, part critique of modern medicine, and it offers a distinctly different riff on pain, creativity, and mind-altering drugs. Carlin traces the long tradition of opium's influence on culture and imagination, from Thomas de Quincey to Frida Kahlo. Carlin Swarnstein was diagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis, or AS, a very painful form of arthritis that primarily affects the spine. Here's the rest of my interview with Carlin Swarnstein. In your writing, in Opium Eater, you explore both the physical and the mental, emotional effects of the pain medications you've used. You mentioned dependency, and in terms of your exploration of dependency and addiction, I'm wondering if you could tell us more about what you've learned and what has been revealed in that.
Like I explained in the book, there's all sorts of different ways of looking at addiction, usually depending on what specialty you are and whether you come from social work or toxicology or what. But regardless of whether you think the continued use of a substance by a person when it does more harm than good to them is a brain disorder or a disease of choice or any other bestseller title of the week, the more humanistic approaches to addiction that recognize that there's many factors involved are definitely compatible with the available evidence. So it's important for healthcare providers to have a more compassionate understanding of the dramatic impact that continual pain or recurrent, on essentially ongoing pain, has on people's lives. At the moment, the current guidelines for opioid prescribing would have doctors begin with non-opioid and ideally non-drug pain management. And so it's a lot has already been done in tightening up those regulations. So it's not they're no longer just being prescribed widely, dramatically, completely irresponsibly. They certainly should never be prescribed at high starting doses, which I understand is still happening. But doses will, it would be normal that if someone did need to continue taking them because the pain was continuing pain that couldn't be dealt with in another way, in a safer way, then it is natural that the dose would probably rise over time. There needs to be a really strong relationship between the doctor and the patient so that the patient can be alert to the ways that things could go wrong and try to address them sensibly to make sure that the patient's properly educated about avoiding overdoses, keeping their medicine away from children, not combining medications, the importance of reducing the risk of tolerance and hyperalgesia by not just taking more and more and more, of avoiding dangerous combinations like opioids and benzodiazepines or alcohol, integrating exercise into your life in a realistic way, and non-drug ways of managing your life while living with pain. I'd be pretty sure that a repeal of affordable health care in the U.S. will quickly reverse the gains that have been made on opioid misuse, because that kind of relationship with a health care provider is something that that needs to be, it requires affordable health care and requires a relationship that's cultivated over time. Making opioids inaccessible to people who don't have a better option is not a good solution. I can tell you that if I was told I should go and meditate and live with the dramatically reduced life that I have had and would have again without pain medication, I'd be looking up fentanyl on the internet before you can say a very bad idea.
One of the things that you wrote that leapt out at me, and I'm just going to quote this this piece as well to you. My 6 months on daily opioids have only helped me to prove for myself what is already known. There are no quick fixes, no matter how desperately I or any other pain patient may need them. And, you know, Carlin, even that statement surprised me for some reason. Tell me more about that whole experience.
You know, that's the only part in the book I think that I have rethought, because it's, I think, 2 years after I wrote, after that, those 6 months, I am still taking tramadol. I am still taking the same amount. I am still living with pain that there's no particular reason to think is about to stop. I'm still taking, I'm back to taking an immune suppressant that all the specialists around me acknowledge doesn't work as well as it could, but my options are limited for taking them. I need them to last, the available ones to last for the rest of my life. When you finish using, when you go off one, you can't necessarily go back on it because you develop antibodies to it. So there are, I am limited in it, and it is actually the only of the various medications that I've taken and the various approaches I've done, this is the only one that has not actually caused me problems. So I did write that, and it is true that you can't, the idea that you can throw a pill at anything and make everything better is not true. Some people have pain that can't be dealt with. But it is a very powerful, opioids are a very powerful way of dealing with pain. And a simple demonizing approach isn't right, despite the what's now kind of accurately being called the opioid crisis because of the carfentanil and fentanyl overdose situation particularly. It's obviously they're showing how incredibly dangerous it can be, but there are many drugs that are very dangerous. And so I don't think that a strict, these are bad, we must stop using them approach is actually the right one. I think for me, they've mostly been the main factor of improvement in my life.
My reading of Opium Eater was really an outstanding experience, and I say that for a couple of reasons. One is how succinctly you brought your learnings and awarenesses into that small novella format. And the other is that your introduction of information about the writer Thomas De Quincey, about the artist Frida Kahlo, and others introduced a whole range of information that I wasn't aware of before I read the book. I'm wondering if you can tell us more about your experience in writing Opium Eater and your thoughts about that non-vella format.
It was like a lifeline in a really genuinely awful time in my life. It was awful because the drugs were not adequate to the level of pain. It doesn't look like I was becoming tolerant to them, but it wasn't adequate. I wasn't successful in overcoming them with the available non-drug approaches that I describe in the book. My desperate emails to my editor, Tai Bridge, who's also the publisher of Nonvella, attest to my very real despair at the time. Now, I don't see writing as therapeutic. I'm writing for the reader, not for myself. I've tried to make it an accessible and enjoyable read and to bring in things like the Frida Kahlo, De Quincey, all the history of it that is of interest to me. But it was a really strange and interesting experience to be writing directly out of an experience that I was living. And I did that both the experience of taking tramadol and other opioids, but also the experience of pain. As for the non-vella format, I saw an article in the Globe and Mail about this tiny upstart press. And I'm someone who planned on writing a book from the time I was 6 years old, but had not yet published a book. And I thought I really, really love short, intense books. And I thought that would be a challenge I could probably manage. So I approached them with an idea. I also thought that something like that would be for a topic that can be inaccessible and there's a lot of information around. I thought it would be a good bet for book clubs and courses and for people in pain to give to other people in pain, or people who've used opioids to give to others. So I thought it would be something that would really be accessible both for people. Unfortunately, having a minuscule publisher does have its own frustrations as well. Promotion and distribution are the main ones. So I walk into a bookstore here in Toronto that has a section on plot-free books, and despite having that kind of esoteric things and very small presses, my book's not on the shelf. So that's frustrating. It's frustrating not having it in print in the U.S., where there's a heck of a lot of people who might benefit from it. But it's also getting noticed a little bit. So it was on the Globe Books 100 this year, which was wonderful, and it's going to be taught on 3 courses this year. So I'm not giving up on the small, tiny format, because I think it's wonderful.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I guess on the romantic aspects of the book, you mentioned Thomas De Quincey and Frida Kahlo, who I talk about in the book, and I definitely did romanticize opioids and looked at the historical literary tradition like that and tried to make the structure of the book feel a bit like a dream as well, which Tai, the editor, really, really helped with as well. That is problematic for a lot of people, particularly people who don't get any pleasure out of taking opioids. They need them to manage their lives and to continue to live a productive life. But I got a lot of enjoyment in writing that. And also, although the book is really short, I wanted it to be packed enough that readers are forced to hold a few different ideas in their heads at one time, so that a substance can be mind-altering without that being necessarily the problem with it. That it can be dangerous and problematic and yet effective, that addiction can be a question of choice and availability and need and biology and other factors all at once. I think that holding on to that complexity in a relatively accessible, short, quick read, my hope is that it forces greater compassion for people who live with pain, whether or not addiction is also a factor, and so more effective societal responses to pain and addiction. My hope would be that eventually that doctors would read it as part of their medical education.
Well, I found Opium Eater to be just an exceptional read, and I've recommended it already to several individuals. I would really recommend anyone who's interested in pain management and the various aspects that emerge from somebody like yourself dealing with long-term pain. The types of learnings that you've brought forward are very valuable. Carlin Swarnstein, thank you very much for speaking with me about this.
Thanks very much, Kevin.
Carlin Swarnstein is the author of Opium Eater, The New Confessions. It's Carlin's first book, and it was published by Vancouver-based nonfiction publisher Nonvella.com. Opium Eater also made the Globe and Mail's list of best books in 2016. You can purchase Opium Eater at Amazon.ca or at Nonvella.com. You can find Carlin Swarnstein online at carlinswarnstein.com and on Twitter and Facebook.
People First Radio is a community media project of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast partners. Listen to our podcasts online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpages.